this is the final Roaring Elephant podcast. And here I am, one last time, with my co-host, Jon. Hello, Jon.
Hello. I was so looking forward to you doing the intro to see if I could detect a hint of relief or sadness or anything like that. But then you have to be that English person, let's be nice, which simply doesn't let that stuff through. So I'll just imagine that you were sad.
Boo-hoo. Yeah. I mean, it's the end of an era.
End of a decade.
Very much so. Just over, if you want to take it all the way back to its initial conception. But yes, exactly a decade if we're talking about from first episode to final episode.
10 years of first big data and then other stuff. Maybe we talked about all that stuff in the previous retrospective episode, which was kind of intentional leading up to this one, obviously. Mm-hmm. And in this episode, we'll just try to, I was going to say, give it a nice burial, but that's not what we want to do, right? Just have a nice
closure.
No, we're
setting fire to this one.
Viking burial, yes.
Yes. Put it on a ship with wood and set fire to it and send it to the middle of the lake.
Dear listener, as you might expect, we did not plan this out. There's no script here. It's just us spending one last evening, morning, lunch break, train ride with you before we sail into the sunset and apparently be set ablaze.
Indeed, indeed. And you mentioned sort of unscripted. You know, I think our first handful of episodes we sort of scripted fairly heavily, but like we stopped scripting things pretty early on. It was wasn't really our style, I don't think. I think when we started we didn't know our style or didn't have a style, maybe. Maybe
we
still don't
now?
but we've been unscripted for a very long time, so in some cases like this is no different from any other episode.
True. Though, no, that's not true. Typically, when we have a guest, especially if it's a guest, that's the first time they come up. Mm. We do try to write down a script a little bit. And that's more out of respect for the guest, so the guest also have some idea what we're going to. We don't really have had approved questions or anything like that, but just to make sure we're all on the same plane a little bit. We didn't share our notes in detail, but typically just went through the bullet points a little bit. Just again, to make sure that there were no surprises, because we were never trying to do anything, what's the word I'm looking for, shocking or
nice. I would say the maximum amount of prep we did was probably we came up with talking points and we would often share those talking points and at least, you know, give folks an idea of the areas that you were likely to discuss with them. And yes. Well,
but that was not the most prep we did. The most prep we did for the news episodes. Because I had this brilliant idea at some point that we should do every other week a news episode where we would just go on the internet that had so much quality stuff that we'd just pick or whatever, take our pick and just talk about that stuff. And we've had a kind of weekly recording slot set up so we record something in time. And I remember in those days we spent many recording slots, not recording, but just trying to find something on the internet that was worth talking about. And that took a long, long time quite often because the internet, not as useful as you might think.
it's not just trying to find something to talk about, but like when you've been recording something like this and talking on a weekly basis about, you know, open source and enterprise tech and, you know, further back in the day, big data, you cover a lot of ground and you cover a lot of topics. And I think one of the things over the decade that we've been doing this is there's a lot of stuff that just keeps getting like dredged up again, a fresh coat of paint, you know, slapped on it, and it gets shoved out of the newsroom door as brand new, exciting news.
Yes, do we ever talk about things like the data explosion?
No, I don't think we've never discussed.
We haven't talked about that yet, so we have to do another. Yeah, whatever. Well, it was fun. It was looking. I mean, I found a lot of new websites I would never have gone to. I've actually become quite an avid reader of the Register.
Yeah, there you go. One more viewer on their view count, their page views.
Probably won't matter that much, but I think personally, I think most of the news articles I took came from the Register. I'm not going to try and find out, but I wouldn't be surprised that is proven to be my biggest source of misinformation.
I tended to use Google News quite a lot too, and like a various. I had like almost like a rotation of three or four different sets of search terms around sort of open source and enterprise or
big technology.
Yeah, or a sort of
blockchain. No.
Yeah, minus blockchain in all of our searches. But yeah, I tended to use that. One of the things I quite liked about that is it did, much to what you were saying, it did sort of pop up news articles outside of, you know, sites that I would have normally looked at, which was kind of useful and kind of handy sometimes. The other thing that some of the articles and some of the topics that we had came from was, you know, I'm still one of those weirdos that uses RSS news feeds for things, and some of those sort of popped up in my RSS news feed, and I flagged them as things we might want to talk about. We've probably still got some articles back in the queues, obviously, but.
I do think it's a good thing that we stopped doing news episodes when we did, because it wasn't the direct cause of it. But could you imagine today doing a Google search or something like that for articles with all of the AI slop out there? I think it would no longer be possible to find something that, one, is interesting, two, hasn't been rehashed 20,000 times, and three, is actually written by a human being.
Yeah, it does go back to, in a lot of cases, you go back to either authors that you know, journalists that you know, like names you recognize, things like that. But there are very few areas where you can go and get something that you can guarantee is, you know, human written. Now,
yeah. I did say human written and not trustworthy true, because humans lie as well. There's a lot of marketing out there, obviously. But still, it's the difference between a person, as you say, somebody who has written before and is a perhaps well-known name, saying something, which is their opinion, which we can then talk about. But yeah, compare that to the whole AI morass that's out there at the moment. I would not be comfortable, I think, most of the time, picking up, even if the name above it, because we've seen a lot of outlets just putting author names on top of AI written stuff.
Mm.
The bigger organizations, the more risk you run, I think. But yeah, we haven't done news episodes for a while. Dave was never a fan of the news episode. That's something that I put in there because I remember I decided that we should go for weekly instead of bi-weekly. Because that's what podcasts do, so we should do that too, because we have a podcast. And then the next thing was, of course, but yeah, we are already kind of struggling to find a topic to talk about every 2 weeks. How the hell are we going to do this every week? Well, let's do a news episode every week. Every other week should be fine. But that being said, even when we stopped doing the news episodes, we still continue doing weekly episodes. So we never missed a week. I'm still very proud of that. Of the whole 10 years, we had at least one episode go out every 2 weeks in the start, and every week when we started to change the cadence. In the beginning, we had the DataWorks Summit, Hadoop Summit, and other summits, other conferences we went to that we sometimes did same day hotel room recordings. We did like three or four recordings in a week. That was brutal.
Yeah, that was. But it did create a lot of content for us for a period of time that we could actually at least recover.
Yes. But I still have vivid memories of sitting in a hotel room behind my laptop editing something, you going out for pizza.
Yeah, me going out to grab us both some pizza and bring it back to the room, so at least we didn't keel over from starvation.
And kudos given, Dave stood by me, even I was doing all the editing, he was just sitting there and encouraging me.
Yeah, you can do it, Jan. Yom, 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 as I stuffed pizza into my face. I do think those were some of the highlights for me, though.
Yes.
Like the events, the in-person stuff.
Yes.
You know, the roaming the halls with the microphones and getting interviewed there. I've still got my little handheld Zoom microphone and sort of recording little snippets and stuff from people, chatting to folks on stands and getting their takes. And like the amusing sort of like, well, we can't talk to you. You're from, you know, XYZ vendor. Like, really? This is I was going to say a side hustle. It's definitely not a side hustle. It's definitely a labor of love more than anything else. But yeah, there's people were occasionally weird about it, but most people were cool about it.
Yeah.
And just, you know, loved what we were doing.
Yeah. And at some point, we also became official media partner for certain events, which also gave us more credibility. And that also made it easier. Then we also had some t-shirts made with our logo and stuff like that.
Yeah.
A big tablecloth as well, which we never used.
Well, I was going to say, like you mentioned the official media, like going to a big, like a major conference, and seeing the Roaring Elephant logo up there as like an official partner on the big screen, on the stage. Come on, that was cool.
It was cool. Yeah.
That was very cool.
That was not something
I think ever. I think I actually have a picture of that somewhere.
Oh, I definitely have a picture.
Yeah.
It used to be on one of our blog posts, but yeah, those have been taken down now. We'll talk about that a bit later probably.
Yeah.
But yeah, I still have the big things all over.
Yeah. The other thing, especially in the early days, basically during the big data days more than anything else, the weird recognition was just funny. You know, you'd get on a call with someone, especially back when we were working at the same place at Hortonworks. You get on a call with, you know, a group of architects or techies of some kind, and you know, you introduce yourself and start talking, and like someone would sort of add a pause, or occasionally not at a pause, someone would just sort of like say, "Do you do a podcast on big data? Your voice sounds very familiar," or words to that effect. And it would sort of completely derail the meeting for like four or 5 minutes, but B, it immediately cemented you in like everyone in that meeting as like an absolute expert in the area, which was absolutely not true.
Of course it was. Come on.
We were two Yahoos. Well, still are two Yahoos with a microphone each and an internet connection and the ability to jabber on about anything. But it had this weird magical power. I still think it's hilarious to this day. And I still, whenever anyone talks to me about the podcast, I always say, like, please, like, you know, any feedback you have, any sort of, you know, if you've listened to an episode, if you liked an episode, if you didn't like an episode, like, please let us know, because we always love hearing feedback from folks. It's like amazing when people take the time to actually reach out, say hi or whatever. Like, it's very cool. It's very, very cool.
Yeah. I mean, you had more of that than I did, I think. Maybe this part of the world, I don't know. Of course, yeah, it had to be voice only, and we didn't have video in those days, in the early days.
Mm.
So I think my audio processing that I do is changing my voice more than it's changing yours.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes the which makes the recognition voice perhaps a bit harder, or people just don't like me, which is totally possible.
I mean, the reality is that Jon does actually sound eerily similar to Kermit the Frog, so you know it could be possible. It could be possible.
Kermit the Frog, really? I threatened you in the first episode recording I could make you sound like a girl. I can do that, you know.
I know. But, you know, the effort that we put into this, I go back to, like, this is very much a labor of love. And I'm not saying that we always loved doing it. Like, it's hard. Like, yep, doing anything for 10 years is like, takes a lot of commitment. And, you know, we each both had and continue to have, like, very busy lives and careers that, you know, don't necessarily give a huge amount of time, spare time for doing something like this that requires a heavy degree of commitment. But we made it work, always, which I'm really proud of. I'm really proud of, as you said, like, the 10 years of never missing an episode release date and time. Apart from, I think there was one where we didn't miss the date, but we missed the time because I think the auto posting failed or something.
No, I put 0800 hours, as I always do. I just forgot to switch it from PM to AM.
But yeah, that's...
And anyway, the first episode ever went live at 3:57 p.m. UTC. But yeah, we always try to also Tuesdays at 8 a.m. Amsterdam time, which is the international time zone for the Roaring Elephant podcast. That's just
indeed
how it is.
Indeed, like many things, the center of gravity is located over in the Netherlands for the podcast. It's I'm really just a constant visiting guest.
I don't remember why we picked Tuesdays for a reason. We had a big discussion about that, I remember, but I have no idea anymore what the discussion was, how it went. But I mean, Fridays and Mondays were a no-go. For some reason, I hated Wednesdays as well.
Didn't we just do like a bunch of research, like back in the day, on like which was the most, like which release day would get you the most listens or like, I don't know.
And there was so much stuff on the internet about how to do podcasting right and what to do. And you were more skeptical. I was young in those days. I'm still young today, but an older kind of young. I kind of tried. Yeah, for me, it was important to do things that were recognized as good, because that gave me confidence into believing we were doing something the right way.
Mm.
Over the years, we've kind of decided a lot of for ourselves.
Yeah.
To be honest, at some point you kind of know how this works and what doesn't work. And everything is different. If something works for some podcasts, if it works for our podcast, doesn't mean it works for anything else. It's all very specific.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, keeping up the enthusiasm to do all this for 10 years, week in, week out, rain or shine.
We would occasionally, I wouldn't say yell at each other, but
we yell.
fake yell at each other, the word energy, and we would just
to wake each other up.
Yeah, that was to both wake each other up and also it just became a running gag. Like before we would start recording, one or the other of us would cry the pre-recording battle cry of energy, and then we would launch with even less energy.
Well, obviously also because we did that battle cry to try and make the other person who started the intro trip up. I mean, just wait until you start the intro, energy, and then you have to start over again. And doing the same intro like 3 or 4 times in a row, it does rob you of energy.
It does.
Fun. That was fun.
I will, I will say we got pretty damn good at the no, like, just like one take and away we go over the years.
Yeah, in the beginning I did a lot more editing because we were figuring this out and we weren't exact. I mean, we knew each other for a while. We were both working at Hortonworks, but I joined in and we started this like 6 months later, I think. So we weren't that used to each other. I mean, you were more or less my mentor, more than less. So there was that, but still there's a big difference between that and being able to just feel when the other person is done talking, then you can jump into it and know how you, and if somebody interrupts, that you have to give them the space. And it's something you have to kind of learn. So in the beginning, I had to do a lot of shifting of audio to make sure it was all audible, because Dave was talking, I want to say something, Dave just like keeps on talking.
That's a and the reverse common theme.
And the reverse. But yeah, after the first year, it was relatively easy to edit it. It was harder with guests, obviously, especially if you had like two or three guests, which made a lot of harder editing to make sure everybody was heard, because of course these guests didn't have this feeling yet.
Yeah.
But I think it went fairly easy and different enough to make it interesting, I think.
Yeah.
We don't just keep a whole episode agreeing with each other, even though you're agreeing with me right now. We don't mind saying that the other one is wrong.
Correct. We don't.
You should have said I was wrong there. Come on. I was just talking about it.
I'm still tripping you up right to the very end.
Man, I think it's called shenanigans.
Mm-hmm.
Which is something, by the way, if any other listeners think of doing a podcast, you have to have fun.
Yeah, yeah.
If you don't have fun with this, it's not going to last. Because as you said, it's a lot of tedious work. A lot of the amount of time spent in setting up guest interviews, making sure everybody's on the same idea, has the dates right, all of that stuff. It's not something you think about when you say, oh, let's do a podcast. It's fun. It should be fun, right?
And even the recordings themselves, like recording slots themselves, just you need to keep an eye on time, obviously. Like you need to keep an eye on like the flow of the conversation. Like you need to make sure that, you know, that there's thinking about the listener, making sure there's some coherent story or track or like
really?
Line that things are sort of following. And I think we generally did that pretty well. Like we may well have had, you know, a whole bunch of talking points, but frankly, if the conversation was interesting and went down a different path, like we would just embrace it and adapt on the fly. And I think that was one of the things that, like, we always got really good feedback on the guest episodes, the interview episodes, especially from the guests themselves. Like we always got feedback that like folks really enjoyed talking to us and like really enjoyed the style and the vibe that we had and like the way that we asked questions, the way that we kind of dug into different topics. And everyone pretty much unanimously, I think, just sort of felt that these were really engaging and interesting and fun discussions, which, you know, I think is, again, a huge testament to, you know, the time and effort that we put into, you know, making this thing something that, you know, people enjoyed listening to.
And we also got something out of it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we wouldn't have done this if there was nothing in it for us. We got filthy rich, obviously.
Oh, yeah. The podcast dollars are huge. Podcast dollars without sponsors and without ads and all that sort of thing. Oh, massive. Absolutely massive.
I think we haven't mentioned that, but we actually have a terms and conditions document specifically drawn up for sponsored episodes.
Yeah.
Now, we never have done a sponsored episode, and we never will, obviously. And it's not hard to know why, because we kind of decided to make sure that our terms and conditions were so outrageously expensive that nobody would ever take them.
I would guess probably, I don't know, do you reckon we probably sent that doc out don't know, maybe three times a year, maybe two or three times a year.
Oh, more than that.
On average?
Oh, more than that. I mean, I was also the manager of the email box, our catch-all box. And typically what happens is we get a lot of emails about, hey, we're blah, blah, we want to talk about blah, blah in your podcast, beautiful guest, whatever, interesting story, blah, blah, blah. Now, I always did a first triage, and I think you saw like a quarter of what we got in.
Mm.
The agreement, dear listener, was that we would both monitor that mailbox, but for some reason it kind of fell to me, which was okay. But now the three quarters, I kind of just sent the TNCs, and we never heard back from them. That was the best way of just shutting them up.
Yeah.
So now I can...
Yeah, it was a great one.
I sent them at least once a month. And hey, I always, every time I sent them, there was a little bit of hope, maybe... Nope.
Yeah.
And actually, we didn't just ask for a lot of money. They had it. I have to remember now because I sent them a lot. I haven't read them in ages, in years. But it had two ways that people could pay for a sponsored episode. It was a fixed sum, or they could donate something, free tickets or books or whatever to listeners. Because we would like, again, we didn't do this for the money. Otherwise, it would have been a very bad investment in our life. But for a commercial episode, we kind of wanted them to pay for it in some way. But if you then could give that payment on to our listeners, well, good for us. We can give it to us some freebie, some discount for it, something. But no takers. Which again was totally according to plan.
Yeah, I would say the one I would call them a partner of ours. The one partner that we did have that I think did. We haven't done as much with them recently, but you know, Manning, the publisher, I think was really, really good. We had a number of episodes over the 10 years where, you know, so Manning has their MEAP program, the Manning Early Access Program, MEAP, where you can you can see books that are sort of partway written and you can get sort of early access to them. Mm-hmm. And we would, we had a contact there and we would sort of get offered, connections with authors that had books, either partway written or usually sort of towards the end of being written. So they were heading towards and starting on the publicity train and we were part of that. And we did a number of I think, pretty good and interesting episodes with authors, linked up through Manning. And Manning often would give discount codes or different things for their books and that sort of thing. That's probably the closest we ever got to a sort of commercial agreement. And it really wasn't. It was just.
Well, actually, they offered us three things. We always asked for a copy of the book so we could actually read the book before talking with the author. So we got a PDF version of the book in progress, which I always read and you glanced.
Sometimes read.
We got a 40% discount code, which we gave to our patrons, which was something that, kind of cool. Why not? Mm. And then they also offered us to do affiliate stuff. So we had affiliate links with them, but we never used them because I don't think I ever told you that. But I thought that was a bridge too far because, don't want to do that. Don't want to get meddled in all that stuff. But I think we liked Manning because they were kind of, I think, the only publisher that has this early access program that allows us to help them in promoting the book, the author a little bit, and us giving us a preview of what's coming out, which was quite often. And we, of course, selected the books that we found interesting.
Yeah.
And our listeners will probably be able to figure out which books came from Dave's idea and which came from mine. But that's cool.
Yeah, I think... We did a handful of episodes that I think we struggled with a little bit, but not many.
I think we struggled every single time. I mean, for me, what I learned is basically don't double think. I think, how do you say that? Don't double guess yourself. I've evolved over the years, and while in the beginning I was kind of uncertain, am I allowed to say this? Is this an opinion that will get me cancelled? Is this something that's too controversial? Nowadays, I think I'm fairly okay in just flowing with it and knowing I'm talking to this audience right now. I won't go outside of the coloring lines too much. From time to time, it's good to do that, just to have a little bit of an effect. It's a good thing, but that's something that changed over time, I think. With guests, that's of course harder to do. I mean, if you know each other, you can joke and just do things. If there's a third person in there, or fourth even, then you have to be a little bit more careful. But for me, it wasn't a big problem, because typically you've had a lot of guests, I kind of shut up. Because basically having five people talking to each other is just annoying. And typically Dave and I, we had a little Google Doc open where I could just, hey, maybe ask this. And then Dave was kind of the spokesperson. That's how we did the labor division, right? You were the on-air talent and I was the technical support, right?
you I think, were the or still are, and have always been the backbone of the podcast. Jan is, quite frankly, far more, I would say the majority of times, not always, but usually far more organized and far more structured than I am. But yeah, I think when we had guests, you would pay far more attention and focus to the audio and the levels and like making sure that things were heading in the right direction. And I was the voice of the podcast, the primary interviewer, and like focusing on the discussion and the conversation. And I think as a structure, as you say, like you get too many people talking, it gets confusing. I think podcasts especially, it's a bit easier with video because you can see people. But
and then of course I did the live editing of the video to zoom in on the person that was talking at the time, which was not easy.
But I think it did work well, that sort of splitting the focus, the division of labor, that sort of thing. And I think it also made things a little bit easier for the guests as well, because then they only had one person they were trying to engage with primarily. That being said, you would occasionally, you would have things that you wanted to chip in or share or ask, which was always fun as well. So it's, I think one of the like weird things that helped us is that we do sound different to each other. And it sounds like an odd thing to say, but I think it helps listeners. Like if we both, had a British accent, I think it would have been a lot more difficult and awkward for some listeners to be able to differentiate. But we do sound quite different, and when we have some back and forth, it's very clear, who's talking.
Yeah, I mean, I can go by words per second to differentiate the both of us. And I also, in editing, I mean, typically for podcasting, you're kind of supposed to make everybody sound like the typical radio DJ voice. And at first I started doing that, making a sound more similar. Yes, accent will still stay different, obviously, but that the timbre, the tone, and everything will be the same. And I kind of changed that at some point to just keep us as a separate thing. Maybe not consciously, but it's just... Yeah, I mean, I have to listen to us talking multiple times during editing, which is horrible listening to your own voice. This is just so annoying. But it's something, by changing the voice enough, it was no longer my voice, but somebody who vaguely sounded like me. But anyway, also a major reason that you did most of the talking in interviews is because basically you're better at it. You've got a better way of doing this. Calmly explaining the question, posing it to it. You're just better at that stuff than I am. I'm just I'm way more in a hurry always to get just answer the question. Like, go to the next question. Come on, I've got three questions lined up here. that's just me. That's why. But I also at the first time I had interviews, I noticed that I didn't speak almost at all. There's actually a couple out there that I only was talking in the intro and the outro. And then I just made a mental note, hey, this is our podcast. I should at least have one or two questions in there as well, just to make sure that I stay engaged. Because, yeah, I can focus on the audio, but at some point I'm no longer listening.
Yeah.
And, well, that kind of defeated the purpose.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I think the dynamic that we always had was... and continues to be, I think, Jon comes in hot with strong opinions.
Never.
And I am typically, I think, a little bit more measured, a little bit more balanced. But I think that's been a good mix over the years. And I think it's led to some really interesting discussions and conversations. And there have been times... maybe rarely, but there have been times when, you know, I have managed to affect your sort of view of things. And there have definitely been times when you have managed to, you know, change my perspective on things. And I think while we may not always agree, we've always pretty much stayed respectful and...
during recordings, anyway.
Yeah, that's true. Not always pre or post recording, but I think it's we've had different opinions, and that's fine, and that's
good, necessary even.
Yeah.
I also think it's a bit of a cultural thing. I mean, the British culture is a bit more reserved, a bit more stiff upper lip, if whatever you want to call it, and the Dutch culture is directness is how you live here.
Mm-hmm.
So, and again, I thought it was a good way of interacting, not having two people being reserved, that's boring, two people being direct is too aggressive, but just having two personalities, basically, because again, if you just listen to the MP3, the only personality you have is through the voice and the way people talk, and by having, as you said, distinct voices, but more than just the sound of the voice, but also in the way the voice is used, makes sense. And to be totally frank, I am that direct in real life. I am really careful in a podcast to make sure that I'm not too direct, because in typical life, at my age and been where I have been, I have the confidence that I pretty much know what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that has an effect. First, obviously, we both work well. You used to, you know, you're no longer customer facing, are you?
Not as much. I still am, but it's not daily basis
anymore. Yeah, but we used to be on a daily basis, right? Solution architects, so you have to have that control over how direct you are, otherwise, you will never sell anything. And yes, selling isn't everything, but if you don't sell, you don't have a job. So basically, you have to make sure that that also works. So it was for me, again, I've said this before, the podcast has been so beneficial for my career. I would not have been able to do this job without the podcast. And I didn't do the podcast because of that, but I continued doing the podcast because of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it made a bigger impact to me during the big data years, because during that period it was a lot of it was about the knowledge we gained through, you know, through the guests, through the discussion, through the investigation that we did and the prep we did, you know, so that we could record and discuss those topics. I think, you know, I'd been in the pre-sales sort of customer facing type roles for probably nearly 20 years even before we started the podcast. You know, it's now been basically 30 years that I've been in this sort of world, albeit the last 2 years I've moved into a different role in a more kind of R&D focused role, but you know, 28 years of customer facing direct engagement, I think the first sort of group of time that we spent, it was such an accelerator for technical knowledge. And not just, I think the thing when you work for a particular vendor, by the very nature of it, you get very good at that particular vendor's technology, well, hopefully. But I think having the podcast opened my eyes to stuff outside of, you know, what was core to my day job, yet was still very connected to the wider big data world. I think that's one of the things that I really gained, was that wider big data universe sort of perspective, and the depth around it, which was, I think, for me at the time, incredibly invaluable.
Yeah, I think for me it was kind of the exact opposite of that, because before joining Hortonworks, which was, like as I said, 5 or 6 months before we started the podcast, I had never done a customer facing job. Well, I'm lying. I started my career as a support engineer on site sometimes, so that did involve it. Basically, it's just point me to the machine and let me do. But before I joined Hortonworks as a solution engineer, I think Hortonworks called them. Mm-hmm. I came from a developer DevOps background at the Supercomputing Center here. So looking at the technical things, I was about as deep into big data as you could get before I joined Hortonworks, which is kind of why I joined Hortonworks, to be honest, because I liked what Hadoop was doing and I want to do more with that. And the Supercomputing Center, well, this is what we did, and now we just maintain the thing once it's built. Let me tell you a secret, listener. Developing and deploying a new big data cluster is super fun, super frustrating, super annoying, but super fun. Keeping it running and maintaining it, super boring. So once that was up and running and the clouding was up and running, I got a chance to start at Hortonworks to do as a pre-sales engineer. But I really had a lot of doubts. Can I do this? Because I'm an introvert. I don't like talking to people. If I can avoid it, I do. I still try to avoid it if I can, because yeah, I'm not that kind of person. So I really had to learn to open up, for lack of a better word, and to engage with people and get the trust in myself that I know what I'm talking about. Because as a developer, DevOps engineer, I don't have to tell you what I know. I built this thing. Look, it's working, right? Leave me alone. As a solution engineer, solution architect, you do a lot of talking and you have to talk with conviction, because otherwise people won't believe you. Because if you're doing, it may be possibly, potentially, but that's not how you convince somebody to have trust, to trust you. So that's something that I really had to learn. And if you're doing a podcast, even though you're in a room by yourself, because we're doing this remotely, obviously, you're actually talking to millions of people, potentially. Yeah. And at the beginning, that was so intimidating. Now, we never had the whole world download us. I mean, their loss, obviously. But still, we had tens of thousands of people listening to us.
Oh, yeah.
Each month, each episode, that was... it humbles you up to a certain point where you kind of don't care anymore, I guess. And, well, no, you never not care.
No. It's not that you don't care. I think it's more that you're comfortable with...
You don't let it affect you.
Yeah. And you're just comfortable with the flow. You're comfortable with your audience. Like we grew, I would say, very, very rapidly in the early years in terms of like listeners and subscribers. And, you know, then, you know, after the first 3 years, maybe 4 years, I would say it sort of that initial acceleration tailed off. Mainly, like, I also think with the ramping down of the relevance of you know, big data and Hadoop as was back then. But then came the slow burn growth just over time. People would just find the podcast and sign up or, you know, subscribe or, you know, occasionally become a Patreon. And it was like truly heartwarming just to see the, like, you know, we do, in fact, one of the constant bones of contention, I think, during the mid years, not so much the early years and definitely not so much the later years, but one of the sort of bones of contention during the mid years is Jon would always put up a, like, I think you had automated the tweets for the episode releases, and he would always do a LinkedIn post, and I would always forget to do my LinkedIn post around it.
Or even like mine.
Or even like Jon's, indeed. That was the pretty much, occasionally if we'd had a guest, they would also, you know, tweet or do some sort of post or something. But that was it in terms of publicity, really. Yeah. So it was just organically people finding our podcast and like finding it interesting, and that to me is wild, and it's why I like every single one of our downloads, listens, subscribers, Patreons, like I feel a huge debt of thanks to you all that you found this like insanity as being something that was worthy of your time and listening. And like I still, you know, this is the 10-year anniversary and final episode, and I know that I will, you know, I will have people reaching out to me and saying thanks and, you know, really appreciating the episode and like, oh my god, is it really it? Is this a very, very delayed and belated April Fool's? Like, unfortunately not. This is the final episode. But I you know, I love that, and I love that our listeners you know, are out there and engaged and are listening to this, and have, you know, some of them have been listening to this for maybe even since the very beginning.
Yep. I mean, I remember when we started the Patreon thing, we thought, well, no, nobody's ever going to do that. I mean, but basically we thought of the Patreon page because if you're serious about something, you must have a Patreon page. That was the main incentive for me to put that thing up because, yeah, if you're a serious, can we call it influencer? I don't know, whatever the name is you want to put on this. Hey, we influence, for good or for bad. but if you want to be taken seriously, you need to have certain things. And Patreon was kind of one of those things that came up at a certain point. And if you wanted to be taken seriously, you need to have a Patreon page. So we put up a Patreon page. And we spent a lot of time debating what we should put on there, what the tiers should be, how ridiculous we should make them or not. But we actually gathered a nice group of patrons, which have helped us with the financial side of this. Because, yeah, it doesn't earn you any money, but it does cost a bit of money. Mics, mixer panels, yeah. Internet, networking, whatever. It ain't cheap. No, after 10 years, I think we've been able to, what's the word I'm looking for?
Break even?
No, that's an English word for depreciation. No, the writing off the stuff. It's been amortized.
Yeah, amortized the assets.
Amortized. It's something like that. I don't. Doesn't matter. I like inventing words. Let's not stop now. But yeah, I mean, there are some initial costs, and we have changed the technical back end over the years, going from Skype, good old Skype. Mm. We survived Skype. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah,
but yeah, any podcast wannabes out there, digital mixers, you need one. If you don't know what that means, just ignore it.
Yeah, I think one of the strangest, like, I think I know we did actually mention it on an episode, but like one of the strangest things that I remember us seeing about the podcast was, it was only a couple of years ago when all of a sudden we saw like the entire back catalog being downloaded multiple times by, it was Meta, wasn't it?
Yep.
And you know, we assume that it's been used for training their AI voice on voice. So yeah, who knows? Somewhere deep in Meta's AI or in its lab somewhere, there could be. I wonder if I'm sure there's not actually a Dave and Jan voice sort of rabbiting at each other somewhere. Although that does make me chuckle. But you know, I'm a little bit weirded out that we have our material has been used in that way. Although, do you remember before we first launched, we had a long discussion about whether or not we would actually have like Creative Commons license and like a little like spiel at the end of each episode.
Yeah, we just decided in the end that we had a little logo on the blog posts and mm-hmm. on all of the aggregators, the iTunes, now Apple Podcasts and all the rest of them. This, you also have to fill in what kind of license you publish under. So we did, I think we decided on Creative Commons, but with referencing. Mm. So you can do whatever you want, but you have to reference us if you want to. Mm. And we actually are mentioned in the foreword of a couple of books out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not going to name names because I don't want to name them, the people I don't want to name. So, that was cool. Also, just discovered that by coincidence. I am one of those people that from time to time Googles his own name to find out how popular I am. See, that's kind of a nerd I am.
One of the other, fun podcast experiences was definitely, do you remember us speaking at a conference as the Roaring Elephant podcast?
Yeah, that was a nice experiment. Not 100% successful, I think. But, I mean, being asked to do that was already amazing. I think we did okay. Yeah, it's way easy to do it like this.
I think our I can't remember what it was. I think weren't we like either just before lunch or just after lunch, maybe something like that.
I think just before.
Yeah, and I think the timing slot killed us and the location because it took me ages to find the where we actually were, but. I was really really proud of the talk track and the slides that we put together because I thought that was we put a lot of time and effort into that and I still think that was I think it was a really good presentation and yeah we only I think there were I don't know
it's a on small the internet
audience it is on the internet
it's
somewhere
on the YouTube
you can't
channel
find
of
it
the...
out there.
I can't call it code. It was Code Motion, right? I think it was Code Motion. Yeah. For me, it was an experiment, but I was very nervous. I remember that. And I was nervous because typically I was a solution architect for a while then, so I kind of knew how to do presentations. You're always a little bit nervous. That's just part of it. The problem was that I wasn't in control because it was a two people and I couldn't just do my thing. I have to do it with another guy, which I hardly know, except from talking to him on a weekly basis. That was just, that threw me a little bit. And I still to today try to avoid co-presentations because it's just a thing.
Fair enough.
All right. Apart from that, do you want to talk about going to YouTube?
Yeah.
Totally me to blame.
This is another one of those things where like it was an experiment to see, you know, it was the time when lots of podcasts were popping up on YouTube and had been for a little while. And, you know, we figured, we have the video anyway, like we were talking on platforms that recorded video because it's nice to see each other when you're recording. Like
body language is important.
Yeah. We've always had a visual connection. Here I am waving at the camera. No one else can see it because we're audio only now. We'll get to that. And one of the things I give Jan a huge amount of credit for is the amount of time and effort he puts into automating the heck out of anything he does if he has to do it more than a couple of times. And with like the audio is one thing, but when you move to video, it's not just like a doubling of the workload. It's like it's a 10x like increase in the amount of work that it takes, at least. And the amount of like amazing automation that Jan built around making that manageable for something that was happening every week was like blew my mind and continues to blow my mind. It would have been even easier if Google/YouTube hadn't continued screwing around with APIs all the time. But even so, even working around that, like that was the back end automation that you built for this podcast has always really impressed me.
Yeah, just to give you an idea of how crap, I don't use that word a lot, but it's really fit for purpose here. The Google APIs are for YouTube is at some point I had over 50 YouTube accounts because they were throttling stuff. And I just had the script cycled through all of the 50 accounts until it found one that wasn't throttled and could upload stuff to YouTube. It was crazy stuff. But for me, the main reason we started doing a video was because I was a bit bored doing the MP3s only, because I was doing it on my Mac in those days. And I was using Logic Pro, if I'm not mistaken. I really hated Logic Pro. I hate that program with a vengeance. It never crashes when I want it to crash and always crashes when I don't want it to crash. I spent so much... Yeah, it was frustrating. So I was looking for some other kind of tool, and then I found DaVinci Resolve, which works for free, which was, wow, it's amazing. And I kind of want to do some video editing, which was new, never done it before, so makes it interesting again. More work, yes, but more fun work, because you're figuring things out. And that's basically why I do the podcast in the first place, to figure things out, both on the technical part, on the knowledge part, on people relationship part. And that's basically why I think I pressured you a little bit, because if I remember correctly, you weren't all that up for YouTube for video recording. I mean, why? Isn't it going to be a lot of work? Things like that. He was trying to protect me, I think. But I think it was fun to do. And it was fun. I mean, doing the video stuff was fun. I started doing little snippets for LinkedIn, and it was, yeah, more work, less free time, but yeah. Rewarding, up to the point that it wasn't fun anymore.
Yeah, I this is one of the few really souring moments, I think, of the podcast. The, you know, having an episode tagged by some BS sort of copyright garbage, and just the amount of hassle that it caused that primarily Jan had to deal with, it really, in my mind, it really just, well, like you all know, if you're listening to this, like, we're audio only again. We took down the all the videos. It's just not worth, you know, we recorded an episode on this if you want to dig into it in more detail, but like, it was very much just not worth the potential, not risk as such, because I still genuinely don't believe there's any risk to any of the stuff that we did, but it's not about the risk, it's about the hassle that it takes to prove that you actually haven't breached any copyright or whatever else they could claim that you have breached. And like, it would be one thing if this was our, you know, our livelihood, our day job, mm-hmm. or whatever. But it's not. This is something that is a hobby. It's done on the side. It's done on evenings and weekends and, you know, outside of work time. And we've got lives to live and stuff we want to do. And chasing around BS copyright claims is not something that either of us wanted to have to deal with. And so we... Unfortunately, because I was actually, you know, I would say our YouTube channel definitely did not take off, but I do think it was really interesting seeing the stats out there. It did give us another audience to engage with, and we did get, you know, occasional comments that we would exchange some back and forth with and that sort of thing. And I'm still a little bit sad that that's kind of how that part of the podcast went.
I mean, the main problem, and it's killing YouTube, it's going to kill YouTube, I think, and Twitch and all the rest, is that in normal jurisprudence, you're innocent until proven guilty. With copyright, it's the reverse. You have to prove you're not guilty, and that's sometimes impossible. You can't prove you didn't do something. And it just, yeah, it's even though you're sure you're okay, and you, it's a thing you were able to use, and you had all the rights to it, you still have to fight it. And that's not why I do this stuff. And to be very honest, I think that one of the reasons that we're stopping the podcast now is that, because it just stopped being fun at that point, and having to tear down a big part of the automation you talked about that was all around the video recording and stuff, that just became wasted effort. I mean, not wasted, we used it before, blah, 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 but it was not something that I built that stuff to work for the future. I mean, I've even built the automation to do more than one podcast. I mean, why not if you automate it anyway? And just having to tear that all down, it kind of broke me a little bit, and in no very dramatic way. I mean, I'll survive. I'll shed a tear and I'll survive. But it just stopped being fun. And ever since that happened, I've been looking forward to the 10-year anniversary as that's a nice point to stop. And say this is one of the reasons, again, we've alluded already before, we're kind of out of ideas at this point around technology, and also not technology itself. Just listen to our the previous couple of episodes we did, the retrospectives. There's not that much fun stuff going on at the moment, unless it's AI and whatever. But I mean, this whole copyright thing, having to tear that down, having to tear down big part of the website. I mean, the website used to have a blog post for every episode. Now it's just one page with a list of the episodes.
I want to say, like, I was really proud of the website. Like, oh, it was okay. I think no, it wasn't. It was better than okay. Like, if you look a lot of podcasts and their websites, I generally think they're pretty crappy. I thought ours was really good. I know that maybe realistically it was you. Yes, maybe we could have put more effort into episode notes and that sort of stuff and blah blah blah. But like, I think our website, especially like when you like went and like, we would often search through if we're like, oh, when did we last talk to such and such? And like, we would go and search through and like, we'd find that, oh, like, we talked to them like this time and now we're doing it. Like, it worked, and it was, I think it looked really good. I think it felt like really professional. I think we did a great job on the website.
That's all due to the logo.
I mean, you know, no I still love the logo.
I still love my logo too. And now it's totally gone, because it was only visible anymore on the very early recordings I had on YouTube. Because even if we only recorded MP3 in the beginning, I still needed something on the screen for the video. Yeah. So I just put the thumbnail in it. And one of the first ones just had our little purple yellow elephant on a purple background for the podcast, something. It was beautiful, but Dave didn't like it. So he built something based on a scratched record idea, something like that. A stamp, no, it was a stamp, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you spent a lot of time on making this whole pattern on the little circle around the logo, making it crackly.
I did. And I love the logo.
I do too.
I love the intro and outro music.
Still the best part of every episode, that's definite, yeah. Even though we shortened it quite a lot, I mean, it was a lot longer than the beginning, but now it's just the beginning and the ending jingle. But yeah, definitely still the best part of the episode.
Yeah, definitely.
So yeah, well, I did gather some stats, so I just want to go over the little bit of stats we have there. Just took a look now. And of course, there's the stats without taking this episode into account, because I can't have stats including this episode until this episode is finished, which would...
Mm-hmm.
Fourth wall breaks are easy. Timey-wimey stuff is harder. But if you take the full MP3 playlist now, that's 5.8 gigabytes on disk. And that's a total of just under 144 hours. And that's 6 days. So if you ever have a week off and you don't know what to do, you can fill 6 full days, 24 hours with Rolling Elephant Podcast.
Six days where you don't want to sleep.
Yes.
Actually, I'm curious. Give me 1 second here. So...
Okay, this is good podcasting. So if you
wanted to if listening to Roaring Elephant became a full-time job for you and you decided to do it for 8 hours a day, it would take you 18 days of listening.
Yes. So if you do 24 divided by 3, you can do the 6 times 3. You could do the math in your head, baby.
Yeah, I just did 144 divided by 8.
Yeah, that's a month. That's good. That's a month of work days. I mean, it's 20 work days a month, right? Ish.
Yeah.
So you can spend a whole month just doing that.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Now, the total amount of disk space, or what Dave noted in the show notes here, total space wasted.
That's video and the audio as well.
There's video, audio, all kind of documents, things with research. There's stuff in there. I mean, there's 17,000 files. It's over 4,200 folders.
Yeah.
For a total of 6.3 terabytes of data. That's actually a 10% of my file server. I'll have to clean house a little bit there.
Yeah. Don't know that you need all of that, but...
Amazing. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, it is.
We're running over an hour here, so yeah, we'll definitely go over to 144 hours here, no problem.
Indeed.
Right, so what does the future hold? No more podcasts, obviously.
At least no more Roaring Elephant podcast. We may, who knows, do something else in the future, the distant future. Not for a little while, at least.
Yeah, nothing we can announce or anything like that.
Yeah. Who knows what the future may hold. We put it this way, we have no concrete plans right now.
For me, it's more, I'm kind of waiting now, at what point do I start regretting stopping with the podcast? Because now all I'm thinking of is, I have my weekends back. Well, I can use them for studying, obviously, because... That's where your weekends go in that case. But it's just, all the free time. But on the other hand, I have no idea what losing this is going to mean emotionally. Mm. So, very not looking forward to it. That's not what I'm trying to say. But anticipatory.
Mm.
Is that the word? It is now.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it will feel like.
It'll be different. Different is good.
Yeah. True.
But I don't think I would ever start something again thinking it's going to be a 10-year project.
Oh, come on. Like, we never started this thinking it was a 10-year project.
Of course we did. We started this exact day, the day that you're listening to this, dear listener, exactly 10 years ago on the 18th of November, we started the first episode launch of this thing, and we thought about this 2 months before that, And we spent actually 15 minutes before starting to record to figure out where it was that we had the idea of doing a podcast. And you can do the reveal if you want.
It was the 8th of September. And by 2031, so just gone 8:30 in the evening, we had decided that we were going to start a podcast together. And the reason that we have this date and this exact time is that is the time that we paid the the receipt at the random steakhouse in Warsaw called Butchery and Wine. And that was the point that after a meeting with a customer that we'd both attended, we went out, grabbed some steak, grabbed some wine, and discussed this crazy idea of coming up with doing a podcast together.
Yeah, and that's what Dave meant with me being more organized. I actually have the receipt from my expense notes from 10 years ago.
Which is just crazy to me, but yeah.
And not only do I have them, I actually was able to find them within 10 minutes or so.
Yep. Yeah, genuinely very impressive and kind of crazy, but yeah.
You see, I never knew, but good things start in Warsaw, Poland.
Yeah.
I never would have guessed.
Certainly this. I would...
And good steak.
I would kind of be curious to revisit the steakhouse together at some point, just for shits and giggles.
No. I caught something there once. I'm not going back again.
He goes back again and accidentally sucks himself into another 10-year podcast shenanigans. Oh, dear.
No, we are going to keep the backlog up for a while. I mean, as long as people download them, we'll keep them available. I think at some point it will disappear, probably because the podcast aggregators incitify the future of the internet further, and it becomes just too much of a hassle to maintain. But we have no hurry of taking them down.
Yeah, they'll be there for a while.
All right. Any last words?
My last words, there are two folks I'd like to thank. One is our audience. Thank you so much.
Which is more than one person, please.
you never know. Just one person downloading all the time. But one group of people then. Our audience, thank you so much for listening throughout the years. Hopefully this isn't your first episode, because that would be really unfortunate. But we really appreciate you. We appreciate all the feedback that we've got. We just appreciate the fact that you've subscribed, you've listened, and we hope this has brought you at least as much fun, enjoyment, entertainment, maybe even enlightenment. Probably not. As we've got. And the second person, obviously, huge thanks to you, Jon, for everything. Being, as I said earlier, the backbone of the podcast. Everything from, the endless editing of a weekly release podcast for many, many years. Being a fantastic person to collaborate with. I couldn't imagine anyone else that frankly would have put up with my shenanigans for the past 10 years. Thank you to you, sir.
How do I beat that? Because that's what the podcast is about, right? I had a chance to go last, so I have to kind of beat that. And you kind of said everything already. Audience, without audience, this would never have happened. And I would not be the person I am today without this podcast. And this podcast is here because we had listeners that endured through 10 years of Roaring Elephant. So it's kind of cheap to just say thank you, but there's nothing else we can do. I would not be where I am today in my personal life or my career without our listeners, which is something that will be impossible to pay back because there is just so many of you, which makes all of this worthwhile.
Yep.
And I do want to do a little shout out to the guests we had over the years. Also a big part of keeping us relevant and honest. Mm-hmm. So that's also something I wanted to add. And yes, obviously without a co-host, you can't have a two-person podcast, and doing this on my own would no way have been possible. I've called Dave the on-air talent before, and I do mean that. Yeah, I stumble through all this stuff, but Dave is a guy that can tie these things together in a way that is not just listenable, but maybe even enjoyable. I mean, considering the amount of downloads we have, I do think we can say that very safely. And yeah, well, he kept it interesting at times. And also on that point, my personality has improved as well. Being in a 10-year project with a team, even if it's only a team of two, you do learn to be less direct, to be more of a people person. And again, I would not be the person I am today without the interactions we had over the last 10 years. So also there, I don't know how to repay, but thank you.
You're very welcome.
And with that, this is all the time we have for this life.
Certainly this project.
Well, for this project, for this time, I mean, we can't say for today because today is going to stretch out for the future. Mm-hmm. We thank our patrons supporting the podcast. We will, of course, be closing down our Patreon. We either just have or will in the next hours or so, because it doesn't make sense to keep that open. But thank you, patrons, for being with us along the journey we've been on. Podcast will stay available. So our website will stay up and running as well, www.rollingoff.org. If this is the first time you'll hear from us, well, when I binge a new TV series, I always wait until the final episode of the final season has done, so I know there's an ending. Well, there is an ending to the Rolling Elephant podcast, so now you can enjoy 10 years, binge it on in 6 days or 24 days. Have fun with it. And if you still feel to send us a little message or encouragement or whatever, our email address, podcast@rollingelephant.org, will also remain up and running for the foreseeable future. And probably indefinitely, because we don't want to give up the domain name of, it's ours, and it'll always be ours. And with our, I do mean Dave, me, and the audience, in the reverse order. No, I'll put you last. Nah, close enough. Until next time we do something that is available on the internet, my name is Jon.
My name's Dave.
And we wish you all a very great life and everything you want and wish for. And maybe we'll hear or see each other again. Goodbye.
See you somewhere else, maybe. If we had a video one, we'd put up the test card.
No, I was thinking of a heart monitor that goes flatline.
Yep, that works.